Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You. I'm Ashutosh Garg, and as always, we bring you some really exciting professionals to get their words of wisdom. Today we have Sameer Kukreja, an old friend, a doyen, if I can call you that, of the food business. Sameer is from the Doon School. He now sits on the Board of Governors. He's a Stephanian, and he's from Cornell University. He's worked in the US in the food business in Four Seasons. Then he's worked for the iconic Nirula's, and I'm going to talk to you about Nirula's because that's a restaurant I used to remember very well. With Yum Restaurants, with Mars, he was president of Zomato, and now he's a consultant running his own company called Tasnia. Sameer, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
It's so nice of you to have come over. So let me start with saying, you know, a lot of people went to the US, and you went there, studied there, worked for Four Seasons, then they came back. Why did you come back?
Yes, when I came back, it was rather unusual because I actually had an offer to get a, the company was going to sponsor me to get a work visa, H-1, followed by a green card. And that was the dumb thing, because in the 90s, India was not happening.
Correct.
But I don't know, it's funny. After Cornell was fantastic, the best hotel school in the world, very international community, great experience. In the working world, at that stage in America, I felt a lot of ceilings. And I was starting young, but I felt a lot of ceilings. And the fact that if you were not white, Caucasian, American, there would be limits to what you could do in that country at that stage, for sure. And while it was not, I had a sense that India would open up. India started opening up in just when I came back, with the liberalization, etc. And, you know, the economy opening up. So, good time, no regrets at all. I had 2 years in America, but, I've been back in India now. 27 years.
And you came back and you joined Nirula's.
I did. First stint was at Nirula's.
So, Nirula's, talk to us about Nirula's. I mean, you know, I remember it many, many years ago, 4 decades ago.
So, Nirula's has been through, you know, it's a brand which I call, which has got a very strong emotional connect among generations of Dilliwalas. But I think what it's best known for, perhaps, is fast food and ice cream, which it ventured into in the late 70s. I think what it's done, very always done as a brand, is been very Indian to its core and heart. While still being international in look and feel and menu, that combination I think worked. Of course, being the only contemporary looking Western style fast food joint and the only one in the country really of any established nature in the 80s until the big MNCs came in the mid 90s is a big advantage. And therefore, there's a lot of emotional connect and nostalgia with the brand. So it's a very interesting brand. Those were early days, but those are the days when McDonald's, KFC, Pizza Hut all entered mid 95, 96, 97. Nirula's was still very dominant. So it was interesting times. I worked across departments, areas, from being a restaurant area manager to a hotel general manager to running marketing to running expansion.
And at some stage, didn't you own a part of it also?
That was in the second stint.
So, you know, it was interesting, you know, when McDonald's came in 96. I remember the first one that had opened. We had just moved back from Singapore and we queued up, I think, 2 hours.
2 hours to get a burger. Yeah. It was right next to the Nirula's.
Right next to Nirula's. And I still used to think that the Nirula's food was so much better. So what went wrong with Nirula's?
I don't know what went wrong.
It lost its franchise.
Yeah. So I don't think. So what happened was that the family which ran it had a certain conservative way of, you know, business. So they never really expanded aggressively. That was their business ethics or nature. So the brand should have really expanded in the 90s. Early 2000s when it didn't. So, I wouldn't say what went wrong, but you know, of course, question which today a lot of people ask is how come there's no Indian fast food chain which has got more than 120 restaurants? There's none. And there are 5 or 6 foreign ones which are 500 plus. So, you know, so, but it's this change happening now. So I think that was just based on the kind of, but at my time when I came back as CEO in 2006, so we scaled it up from 35 kind of hotel restaurant, 35 operations in 2 cities to 85 in 8. So there was enough. We got lots of traction in various tier 2, tier 3 cities, North India. We even went to Indore. We opened something at Bay Airport. So it's not that the brand definitely had opportunity to expand across India. I mean, I clearly, you know, proved that. So
very interesting. And you were also in Nepal, if I remember.
Yes, in the 90s, they were in Nepal. Not only in Nepal, but in Muscat. But ran only for a couple of years. That Nepal had ran for 15 years. 3 odd restaurants in Nepal. From the 80s to the late 90s.
And then at what stage did you exit and then come back?
Yeah, so I exited in 2001. I joined Yum Restaurants. So when I joined, there were 17 Pizza Huts in India and 1 KFC. And I was the head for business development and franchising for the region, which included Sri Lanka, Pakistan, Mauritius. And I actually set up Pizza Hut and KFC in Bangladesh. So yeah, I took it from 17 to 85 Pizza Huts in India. That stage, there was no KFC expansion. Set up Pizza Hut, KFC in Bangladesh, which is very interesting. You know, did 6-7 visits, expanded. We've worked with the franchises and expanded both brands in Mauritius, even in Pakistan, before the 2001 Parliament attacks there. Mm-hmm. So very interesting, a big international, you know, strong learning systems, very flexible at that stage, because to grow in India at that stage, you needed to be flexible in terms of menu, in terms of support to franchisees, you know, the business is still young. And so exciting 3.5 year stint there. Mm-hmm. Then I got an opportunity to join Mars Hotels and Restaurants, which was owned by another Cornell Hotel School alumni. Mm-hmm. But I didn't, he was senior to me, I didn't know him. Well, he ran an interesting boutique hotel called Gordon House and some bunch of restaurants, including Tendulkar's, Verdi's Cake Shops, Jazz by the Bay.
This is where?
All in Bombay. So I joined him, helped expand his business, opened a Gordon House boutique hotel, 30 room in Pune, opened a couple of restaurants, concepts in Pune, opened a big food court with various brands in Bangalore, and helped him. So while I was there a year later, he sold a majority stake in his hotel restaurant company to a private equity fund. Mm-hmm. Coincidentally, 6 months later, the same private equity fund was looking at acquiring Neruda's. So that's how in 2006, I came back. I came back as a co-investor and a partner with the private equity fund, which did the acquisition from the family in mid-2006.
Okay. So, you know, with McDonald's really dominating the scenario, its current problems have been sorted out. Mm-hmm. Burger King coming in. What's happening to this space? I mean, you know,
the space is growing like crazy. So if you look at the QSR space, there's enough interesting Indian players also. Mm-hmm. So there are two. There's a player called Goli Vada Pav. 300
him.
Outlets.
I know him.
You know him. So there's also Jumbo King. You know, so if you look at guys like that, they've become organized. They've reached some scale. Of course, purely on a franchise model. If you look at Natural's Ice Cream. 150 plus outlets. So Parlour's suddenly grown over the last few years. You look at, and the ones which are still conservative, though very successful, Haldiram's and Beacon, you know, because they don't, you know, Sarvana Bhavan, which is interestingly expanded more internationally than, I saw three in the UK this time when I was there, and they're all full. You know, so there are enough Indian kind of, I'd say, QSR brands which have done well. So Sagar Ratna is 100, 80, 100. There are enough at the 100, 150. There is, of course, the big MNCs. McDonald's is doing well. KFC, Burger King has expanded well. Domino's, of course, is the leader. But I think you will see more Indian QSR concepts growing and coming up, because there's still, it's a very under-tapped market.
And what are some of the challenges that these restaurants face?
Challenges in scaling up is many. So many challenges. One is consistency of your concept. You know, so doing it in one city, that was a challenge when we were at Pizza Hut, when it was at Nirula's, we always had the challenge. How do you ensure that the service, the product, the atmosphere is consistently executed across owned outlets, franchisee outlets? How do you adapt to local tastes? Like in Surat, we had to open the first all-vegetarian Pizza Hut. In Ahmedabad, in one section, we had to open a vegetarian one. Another part of the city, we managed to open a non-veg one. You used to understanding these nuances and then creating menus. At Nirula's, we opened a 150 square foot takeaway. I don't know if you remember this kiosk at the old domestic airport in the budget section.
Yeah.
And when we did it, my private equity fund was like, I just 6 months after takeover. They're like, you don't have my partners, you don't have a concept. I'm like, I have a factory. It's an opportunity, F&B. And at that time at the airport, son, you guys don't know, we used to get rubbish. When we used to travel, we used to get awful coffee, tea and food at all airports in India, including Delhi. Horrible cheese sandwiches. And the first two private players was Cafe Coffee Day, which opened at the terminal from where Air India and Kingfisher flew, and Nirula's, which opened from where all the budget airlines flew. We, out of that, we got a return on capital of 1,500% in 2 months.
Wow.
Okay. So we created a format. So you have to innovate. So we created a format and a whole menu from scratch, which was RTE, ready to eat food. And we managed to convince customers that this is a Nirula's burger, but this is a different burger, and you're getting it at a different price point. You know, you have to be very flexible. Another challenge is, I'd say, profitable unit economics as you grow and scale up and keeping that model profitable. And then challenge of trained manpower. Entry level, skilled, managerial, big challenge, still big challenge in the industry.
Yeah, that's true. I agree with you. You know, if you were to look at how the QSR business is changing, today I find that it is very easy for me to even order, go to a Swiggy's or a Zomato or one of these other companies and even order my burger online. So do you see that making a huge change?
Yes, I think it's a big change. So it's the aggregators have helped grow the delivery business for sure. They've helped acquire new customers, they've helped create a habit. I mean, today you can order a chai and a cappuccino. The coffee companies have worked to create a coffee drinks which will deliver well online. So a cappuccino doesn't deliver well, but espresso will deliver well, a milk, a frappe will deliver well. So because the delivery market is huge and it's growing, and it's still, if you look, compare internationally, it's not, it's We haven't even scratched the surface in India. To give you an example, I'm the trustee and the past president of the Restaurant Association. We bring out a very detailed report, which I chair the report committee. We just released our latest one in 2019, May. The average frequency of eating out, ordering in, whatever, some frequency of eating non-home-cooked food has now gone up to 6.6 times a month in India.
Wow.
It is 30 times a month in Singapore, 45 times a month in Bangkok, and 60 times a month in Beijing and Shanghai.
Yeah, I was looking
because, you know, if you look at it, there are actually four occasions in a day when you eat. Breakfast, lunch, dinner, and probably either a mid-morning coffee or a mid-afternoon, at least four. So, if you're having it in your office cafeteria, that's in-house. But if you're going down to the office building and picking up a chai or a Starbucks cappuccino, that's out of home or out of office. And we're at 6.6 versus 30, 60, 90. So, you know, the business is still very... So, therefore, delivery is growing, I think, good for the business.
Well, I can imagine, because I was looking at some statistics and they say the Chinese market is some 800 billion.
That's crazy.
And the Indian market is 60 billion.
61 billion.
So,
it's that nothing. Means they're not even wanted.
Yeah. So the upside is huge.
The upside is not only that, we this time in the report, we didn't even compare to China because that's an embarrassing comparison, but we compared to Indonesia, Turkey and other countries which are smaller than us. Mm. We're smaller than some of them. Our food service market. And when we measure the food service market, we actually measure the unorganized sector. So we're actually measuring the dabas. Total 60 billion. Mm. Including every food option you have in this country. So it's nothing.
So is it because not enough food is available to suit our palate?
No, I think it's basically because now culture is changing. So, there's all this full-time domestic help. It's about the cultural habit of entertaining at home versus going out.
Away, yeah.
No, in some, you know, it's different. So, Bombay, it's changed. Bombay is different because you have smaller homes, less full-time help. Delhi, it's still there more. Delhi, again, has a big club culture. And clubs don't get measured because clubs don't give data across, you know, so we don't know how many meals get eaten out in clubs. So, that our report doesn't cover it. But it's changing. So a lot of this is due to societal kind of factors. Yeah. I don't think it's about availability. Today, actually, there's a very interesting availability of all kinds of cuisines and food across price points. Mm. So, you know, I don't think it's availability. But it's growing rapidly.
And what's happening to Indian food outside India?
Very interesting stuff.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's still a lot of opportunity. Like, I was in England, I'm doing some consulting work. There's still a lot of opportunity, say, for Indian QSR food in the UK and in other countries. But in the fine dining space, brands like Indian Accent have done really well in London. New York, Fuzzy Cafe has done well in Dubai, in London. Sarvana Bhavan does very well wherever it goes. Even Bikanerwala has brands abroad. So, but there's, of course, a lot of local kind of Indians who've moved to these countries who've set up concepts. A lot of them are in the dining, fine dining space. But yeah, I think Indian cuisine, while it's the top of the pops in England, is increasingly becoming popular in other countries.
Mm.
And it's not only with the NRI company.
So now moving to your new venture. First, tell me what the name stands for.
Oh, so Tasanaya is T.A. Tandeep, my wife, S.A. Samir, N.A. Nanki, one twin, and Y.A. from Kimaya, which is the other twin.
Wonderful.
The word means nothing, but
yet it means everything.
Yeah, I'm hemmed in by my three women, so yeah, totally, it means everything.
Wonderful. So after so many years as a line manager,
as a corporate manager, and professional employee, you know,
how does it feel to...
So, I've done this, So, when I quit Nirula's in 2012, I actually just quit. I wanted to take 6 months off. I hadn't taken time off for a while. I traveled, I did stuff. And I didn't plan this. It was... I was actually going to do another job, normal, you know. And but I started getting a lot of interest in both startups and young entrepreneurs approach me. And so, the first thing was there was a company based out of Singapore called Eat2Eat Table Reservation, which do table reservations for high-end hotel restaurants. And they were entering India. Had a couple of calls and then the guy says, send me a contract. I couldn't tell him I didn't have a company.
Mm.
I couldn't send him a contract. I hadn't formed anything. You know, so I scrambled, formed a company, sent him a contract. And it was a, you know, monthly retainer for X months. And I was like, you know, and then I said, okay, this is enough to, you know, keep going. Let's start. And then there's just, it's never, you know. So it was, I was planned. Though I've always felt there's a shortage of what I do today, which is, there's still, I mean, I have a niche. I do kind of very operational hands-on consulting.
Mm.
It's not strategy and it's not a PowerPoint in Excel. It's actually working with companies, with entrepreneurs. And a lot of the work I do is with small to mid-sized players. I work with some chains also.
Mm-hmm.
But it's actually very hands-on. It's basically putting my, after my, of my 28, 29 years, 22 has been in operational roles. So it's putting that experience into practice. So it's not, it comes and that's, the consultants in the space today are either the big six who work in the space or some firms where they have, no one has operational experience. So therefore, you know, I find clients get a lot of value addition from what I bring to the table.
And you haven't thought of going back and starting something new?
Not as no, no. So because I'm doing, you know, so I do a variety of work. I do fundraising, both on the buy side and sell side. I do executive search at CEO, CEO, HOD level. I'm doing brand entry strategies. I'm currently advising Godiva Chocolates on the India entry. I work on kind of growth and expansion and, you know, systems and processes. So I do a lot of, I've done a lot of interesting work in taking people from even 1, 2 to 5 or from 5 to 20. Yeah. These challenging stages.
Yeah.
And I've done a lot of consulting work in tech, hospitality tech. So that's also been, so it's very diverse work. And I love being a master of my own destiny. And I actually, it's nice not to have the operational headaches. So
that I agree with.
I agree. You've done it. So, you know, I've done that for so long that, you know, it's nice not to have it directly. Mm.
Our podcasts are being heard by thousands of people. A lot of people we talk to say that, you know, should we have a partner in our journey?
I think it depends. No, I think partnerships do work. In the consulting environment, I haven't taken on a full-time partner. The way I've done it is that I have actually worked with network consultants who have between 20 to 40 years of experience. I have a couple, few network consultants who are on my website who work with me, who are more senior than me. So that's the partnerships I've formed. I've also got partnerships with other organizations. But I haven't found, but I think if you're setting up, if you're a startup, setting up, is, you know, whether it's a product or service, any sector, in that I always advise, it's, I've seen the ones where their partners flourish more and do better than the ones where there's single people driving it.
And are there a lot of startups coming in the food business?
Yeah, crazy. There are a lot of startups in, I'll say, three aspects, in F&B retail, in technology, and in food processing. So in popcorn, in packaged tea, packaged coffee, dip.
Yeah.
I was reading this morning about Wingreens. I know them well. John, have you ever done this?
No.
So there's a couple, and they do some amazing work. And they do dips, Western style dips. And it's grown from a, some, it's almost 100 crore business invested, you know. So lots of, yeah, lots of startups.
Yeah, we did speak to Akshay Vector.
Yeah, yeah, Akshay is big. So Akshay is very big, yeah. So lots of startups in these three sectors. Terms, lots, enough innovation happening in our industry. Hmm. Yeah. Even in hotels. I mean, Oyo is a startup.
Very.
Look where Oyo has reached today.
I know. With 28, 29 years of experience, what keeps you going every morning?
You know, I love what I do. Uh-huh. I've always loved what I do. In whatever role, I've only taken on roles or jobs that I'm excited. I love what I do. Every day is different. I'm now being an entrepreneur. I really can say I'm a master of my own destiny. So I love what I do. So I get up at 5 a.m. I spend some time on my own. I do a lot of reading online, kind of internationally on subjects that interest me. Then I run.
Yeah.
So, and then I, you know, do some work. And you have to be, I think, as an entrepreneur also, if you're going to be an entrepreneur, you've been in the corporate world, you can only succeed if you're very driven as a person. Mm. Because you have to have that discipline and drive to,
correct,
you know, and there's no boss who will, you know, asking you for reports or for, you know, deadlines, yeah, or then you have to, yeah. So now I'm, you know.
But. And, you know, with two young daughters who have not gone to college, how do you manage your work-life balance?
I take a lot of vacations, even short, could be 3 days. So I'd say I'd vacation, one big one, 2-3 weeks in the summer, and then maybe another 4, 5, 6, you know, every 2 months. And then I switch off. I always have. So even when I was CEO of Nirula's, I used to, at that stage, I had a BlackBerry in which the emails used to come. And I used to put it into my cupboard at 8 p.m., not look at it till 7 a.m. Just like, you know, and my home landline was available to people if there was a crisis. But you have to learn to switch off, I think. And if you learn to switch off.
And you're a person after my heart.
Yeah.
So I don't look at my phone after 7 p.m. Till 5 a.m.
So now, no, I don't know, but I look at Facebook at night and, you know, Instagram and those fun stuff I do in the evening. But yeah, I switch off and I travel. Like when I was on vacation just now, I used to, because I wake up early, I did my work. I had work to do, but I did in 2 hours every morning, and the rest of the time I was on, not looking at my email, and I didn't, you know. So you have to spend time, spending time with, you know, family, friends, with doing the stuff that you enjoy is very important.
Correct.
As a person.
Correct. So I'm going to ask you one question that I ask all our guests, you know, because a lot of our young viewers somehow believe that all of you successful executives have never failed.
Oh.
And when we, so I'm going to, my question to you is, I want to hear from you, what are some of your learnings from some of your failures?
I wish I could say I've never failed in business or in job. One of the ones I'll talk about is, so it was in 2009-10. We set up a, you know, Nirula was expanding across the country. We were expanding both the fast food brand and also the potpourri brand. We decided, we had a group of people, 5-6 of us, which, you know, the business development head, which went, looked at sites, cities, and everyone went and checked this one off, including me. It was a potpourri in Lucknow, in the most successful mall in Lucknow. The mall was rocking, footfall was there, Nirula's brand had resonance in the city, and it bombed. we had to close it down within 14 months. So we had to write off capital. My partners, the fund, were very unhappy. And then finally said, we actually did a learnings presentation on that. We presented to the fund what the various people involved had learned, what they would do to make sure they and their teams didn't repeat the mistake. And one is, I've always taken accountability. So at that stage, it was, I said, my fault. I screwed up. Okay, I'm the CEO. Finally, I approved the site. Finally, of course, they approved the site. Because this capital, you know, I said, but we approved the site, we recommended to you. So one is to accept that you made a mistake. Mm-hmm. And then to encourage the teams, and I've always encouraged myself, I've always written down problems. Mm-hmm. This is a big one, but even the small ones. And put them away. Now I do it in the comp. Then you look back at it. So you'll always make mistakes. Yeah? You've got to learn from your mistakes. Mm-hmm. As long as you learn from them and don't repeat them, the behavior is not repeated in your teams.
So in this particular case, what was
the learning? The learning was that we hadn't done enough research on the acceptability of this casual dining brand. So we opened a salad bar. Lucknowians didn't understand salads. Yeah. So we had to shut the salad bar and do a hot buffet. You know, so we kept trying. So we hadn't done enough research on what would work. They actually wanted a multi-cuisine restaurant. Mm. That's what works in Lucknow at that stage. Today it would do really well. But 9 years ago it didn't. So we hadn't done enough research on that. That was the mistake, basically.
Just as an aside, I was talking to some other senior food people and they were saying that despite all the cuisines and the menu items that are available, what still sells is butter chicken, kali dal and roti.
Absolutely correct. So even the research shows the most popular cuisine across India is North Indian. Even in Bangalore.
Okay.
In fact, we've done it by region. Hmm. North Indian is the most popular cuisine in India.
Right.
By customers based on demand, based on what Zomato data has and always. So yeah, nothing can take away from those heritage dishes you just talked about.
So my last question to you, Sameer, you've been an entrepreneur, you've been a professional, you're now consulting. There are so many young professionals who want to start up. What would be your advice to some of them?
So my advice is that, start up if you truly feel you have a unique, differentiated product or service, whatever you're going to do. Make sure you have enough funding, whether it's for the first part family funded. So you're not spending, I feel a lot of entrepreneurs struggling and spending a lot of their time just running after getting money. And then I would say get a partner, definitely have a partner and then, build a team of like-minded people who are willing to take risks, because these startups really work when everyone's sacrifices salary, gets in with, equity and puts their heart and soul on the table. And I think we have a very encouraging ecosystem for startups across various industries. Mm-hmm. And there's so many success stories. So, yeah, I do it. But you have to have a certain mindset and a certain type of person. Not every, there are also enough corporate professionals across sectors who I read about who've done startups and gone back because it didn't work. Mm-hmm. Nothing wrong with that either. Yeah. You'll learn. But it's not that every startup is going to, hit it out of the park.
Thank you, Sameer, very much for coming to our podcast.
Thank you. Pleasure.
We really enjoyed having you here.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Called You podcast. Be sure to visit tbcy.in to join the conversation, access show notes, and discover fantastic bonus content. You can follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Simply search for The Brand Called You. Thank you, and see you next week.